can come up on our 10:30 argument on parental rights, LRS, JMS, JLS, docket number 86682.
Good morning. Do I start here or do you want me to start over there?
How is everybody?
Fine.
Good.
I think you can start wherever you're comfortable.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
So do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes. 4 minutes, please.
4 minutes. Okay. So obviously the clock's in front of you on the podium, but you'll get a little ding when it gets to the 4 minute mark. Your choice if you want to keep going or if you want to go ahead and stop at any time, just tell us you're going to reserve the rest of your time. Okay.
Okay.
And you can start whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. Stephanie Kills, representing the appellant, Daryl Ryan Stokey, who was present with us today. I'm asking this court to overturn the trial court's decision terminating Mr. Stokey's parental rights for two reasons. One, it was not based on substantial evidence as required by the law. Two, the trial court applied statutes that were not applicable in this case. The trial court found that Mr. Stokey was neglectful and unfit, despite the fact that Mr. Stokey engaged in counseling for over 2 years consistently, successfully completed counseling, was able to articulate the things he learned at trial so well that even the trial judge noted that it appeared that he learned in therapy. He obtained another mental health evaluation to rule out psychosis and personality disorder as required by the custody evaluation. He asked for visitation during the divorce, right after the divorce, in 30 days before the termination, the petition to terminate his parental rights was filed. Additionally, he completed successfully his criminal case.
Counsel, could you address 128.107 and whether that applies in this situation or only in a 432B case? Because it's not quite as clear as the other
it's
statute.
Not. Yes. Okay. So the heading of NRS 128.107 clearly states specific consideration. Okay. No, I'm sorry. Let me get that. Oh, yes. Specific considerations where child is not in physical custody of a parent. So that means to me that it arises out of a 432B action. Additionally, when you look at the prongs of the statute, it talks about issues relevant in 432B cases, like visitation or other contact with the child that was designed to carry out a plan to reunite the child with the parent. Carry out a plan refers to a case plan to reunite the child with the parent. Case plans are designated in 432B cases.
But aren't they also part of a reunification plan or similar to here, there was a case, and I'm using that colloquially, but there was a plan for reunification that was set forth by Dr. Collins, adopted by the court. Couldn't we reasonably construe that to be, because it says outside of the custody of a parent, not parents. And so, you know, it seems to skew a little bit for me more that those factors should be taken into consideration on any termination of parental rights, whether it's 432B or not.
Okay. I respect that question, Justice Lee. The problem, though, is that in 432B cases, the case plans are very clear. In this case, the plan wasn't clear. Even when Ryan thought he completed the requirements that were asked of him, he submitted that information to the respondent. The respondent couldn't even ascertain whether or not he had completed the requirements. The documents were sent to Sunshine Collins, and she couldn't even make a determination without further investigation. So to me, it's not an adequate plan. Additionally, when you look at prong number four, of NRS 128.107, it talks about whether additional services would likely bring about lasting parental adjustment. Parental adjustment is used a lot in the 432B cases, and the trial court didn't even determine whether or not additional services would bring about lasting reunification. More importantly, Ryan put forth evidence, proffered evidence, demonstrating that he had already adjusted his circumstances. At the time of the divorce, he was angry, he had violated TPOs, he had a criminal case. By the time of trial, none of that was present. The criminal case had been successfully completed. He had no further arrests. He had engaged in therapy. He had successfully completed therapy. It had been determined by another competent forensic psychologist that he did not have psychosis or personality disorder. He had maintained his home for 2 years. I'm sorry, was there a question?
No.
Okay. And so
I was reading while I'm listening.
Okay. And then additionally, speaking of statutes that were not applicable, NRS 128.109 clearly states that the presumptions are only applicable for cases arising out of 432B.
That's so, what my question was going to go. I was letting you finish on that.
Though. Okay.
I'm just curious. I know on page 10 of his order, he makes reference to that statute and in one sentence references 432B, but there's really no explanation in the order itself.
Right.
So I'm just asking for input from you as to how he somehow analyzed that to say that statute somehow applies to a non-432B proceeding.
Well, the decision was unclear and baffling to me. When I got the decision and saw he had cited these statutes, I was baffled. I couldn't understand it. But he does more than cite to it. On page 11 of his decision, at line 24, he says the presumption of NRS 128.109 applies. So he doesn't even cite it. He says it applies, and it clearly does on page 11.
So to your knowledge, there was nothing prior to the written findings of fact conclusions of law being entered in which there was some analysis and explanation in a proceeding on the record somewhere where he kind of coalesced in his mind how a non-432B proceeding could have that statute applied to it.
No, Your Honor, not to my recollection. And I don't even recall the respondents ever mentioning it at trial or in their trial brief.
Okay.
So I don't know where he got that from.
Let me ask you just a question about the divorce decree itself. My understanding is that that divorce decree was unilaterally drafted by mom's counsel.
That's correct.
Was there a hearing? Because there were some conclusions of or factual findings, I guess, in that mm-hmm. in that divorce decree, which I know your client previously contested. Mm-hmm. Was there ever a hearing before those factual determinations
no.
were made?
No. Those statements and allegations were unlitigated and undisputed because there was not a trial. The respondent or the respondent requested a default judgment. So it happened before the trial date was even supposed to take place.
So those factual findings were drafted exclusively by mom's counsel.
That's correct.
What dad's counsel didn't have enough, or I don't even know if he had counsel, but he didn't have an opportunity to review, weigh in, or
submit. No, not to my knowledge. I did not represent Mr. Stokey in the divorce case. I was appointed at the termination for the termination case. I know that mom was represented by counsel throughout the case. And at the hearing in February 2022, my client did have an attorney, and that attorney was supposed to file a pretrial memorandum and a financial disclosure form. And it was never filed, and I guess he withdrew. The respondent requested a default before the trial, so none of the issues were litigated, not child support, not the statements about whether or not he has psychosis, whether or not his constitutional rights were violated because he wasn't allowed to visit his children for 3 years. None of that was litigated.
But there was a hearing on the TPR itself, correct?
Yes, yeah, there was a trial. There was an actual
trial. Right.
And I respectfully submit that at the trial, Judge Goudet was hyper-focused on my client's failure to pay support. As a matter of fact, during my opening, I recall him interrupting me, asking about support. And he said he had no tolerance for parents that did not pay support. He had no tolerance, no excuses, and he was very focused on that throughout the trial. And my client was not even ordered to pay child support in the divorce proceeding. The respondent obtained the default judgment for child support arrears and a child support order in the default decree. And my client testified that he did not get the decree until January, which is when I sent it to him, January of 2023. And we had a termination of parental rights trial 3 months later in April. And justices, I mean, I have my whole argument going, but my client's constitutional rights to the care and custody of his children were violated. He was not able to visit his children. I practice in child abuse and neglect. The court appoints me cases. That's what I do. I have about 70 cases right now, and almost all of those parents get to visit their children when they have been found to have committed more egregious acts than Ryan Stokey was alleged to have committed. Yet he was not able to visit his children. And when you look at the custody evaluation, even the evaluator never said that he has psychosis, never said that he was that he physically abused anybody or that he was violent toward Marie. It intimated to it, but it never said he has psychosis. So for his rights, for his right to visitation to be terminated, it was unconstitutional. Well, not terminated, but indefinitely suspended with no clear path to learning how to reinstate his right to visitation.
Were these constitutional arguments raised below?
Absolutely. They were raised in my pretrial memo. They were raised at trial. And the judge just felt like his constitutional rights were not violated because he knew what he had to do to visit the kids. But my argument was his right to visitation should have never been stopped when other parents who have been found to be abusive and neglectful in 432B actions have a right to visit their kids. And I cited, you know, numerous cases, and I could have cited 15 more showing that parents who have been found to have their children have had fractures, they've still been allowed to visit in 432B cases. Parents who are violent toward the kids still have a right to visit. Parents who are on drugs still have a right to visit. You know, parents whose children have unexplained injuries still have a right to visit. Yet Mr. Stokey's rights to visit were indefinitely suspended. So I think that's a constitutional violation. And then the fact that he was not able to visit was used against him to terminate his parental rights. So it was inequitable. Right, justices. And then, I'll just wait for rebuttal on that. Are there any further questions? I will reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Marilyn Kasten, bar number 11654, appearing for a respondent who's not present with me, living in a state. Your Honors, I hear a lot of argument in appellant's counsel's argument that has to do with the divorce decree. That's not under appeal as we sit here today. Only the termination is under appeal. Ryan Stokey had his right to appeal that divorce decree, to try to overturn that divorce decree. He could have tried to move it aside. He didn't. And the reason why that decree was entered is because he had completely failed to prosecute this divorce. Prior to that proceeding, there were hearings that Mr. Stokey was at, that his counsel was at, his prior counsel, where they were instructed in no uncertain terms, you will comply with my trial management order by, at that point, Judicial Officer Harder, saying you will file a pretrial memo, you will file a financial disclosure form, you will comply with all of the requirements in a basic divorce so I can get you to divorce. He chose not to do that.
Okay, so now we're at the TPR stage, and so let's talk about that.
Correct.
First, I want to start with the NRS 128-109 and this notion that you can apply it by analogy. To me, it's very clear that the statute expressly states that it applies to only 432B cases. So why should we uphold a presumption that was used by the court improperly?
I do agree that it specifically states it applies in 432B cases, but I don't think it was actually applied here. I think it was analogized, and he specifically said it's analogous to a 432B case where there is a clear case plan and dad's just not doing it.
But the analogy is that I'm either going to apply a presumption or not. So there's more than just an analogy. It's a way to analyze whether or not TPR, the civil death penalty, is appropriate. And so if you're going to reference that statute, I assume you wouldn't reference it if you were not going to then import the presumptions that are reserved only for 432B cases. If you think that's improper, don't you think?
I think it amounts to harmless error here. There's another presumption that absolutely applies, and there's case law and precedent in a very substantially similar situation, the in Ray LCN case, where in that same circumstance, dad was prevented from having visitation and custody with his children pursuant to a custody order and chose to do nothing about that, despite having a clear plan in place on how to get that custody and that visitation. And eventually his rights were terminated against his wish with the abandonment presumption, that because he chose not to move the court, comply with the order and get that visitation, that is evidence of abandonment. And that presumption.
And I appreciate that, Your Honor. But I mean, Your Honor, I'm Your Honor. So I'm used to being on your side of the But and I do appreciate that. But I guess in terms of abandonment, let's talk about that. There has to be a clear intent to abandon the child. When I reviewed the record, there were multiple communications with Marie's counsel asking for visitation. He had purchased certain items for the children. He had sent money, even though it wasn't the child support, but he sent money. He was on Zoom with these children until Marie said, let's go to a pay-to-use platform, which was he wasn't able to bear that financially. There's nothing in the record that indicates to me a clear intent to abandon these children. And I understand child support. He didn't pay child support. But that alone can't be the basis for terminating someone's parental rights.
Sure. Not only did he not pay child support, he didn't voluntarily send any items. He didn't send Christmas cards, presents, birthday presents, shoes, medicine, clothes. He didn't send anything to these children. And in fact, Marie sent weekly updates with pictures, with developmental milestone, academic achievements, and he didn't even engage with that information. He used that line of communication to attack mom, berate mom, harass mom. He was not interested in these children, period. He didn't move the court at any time to reinstate his visitation if he felt like he had supported them and he felt like he had not abandoned them. Those communications that Justice just referenced, he just said over and over again, I've done what I'm supposed to do. I've done what I'm supposed to do. He wouldn't provide
There's evidence that he did that, right? I mean, he
actually isn't, because if you look at the timeline, it contradicts his representations.
Let me ask you a question, because under the statute, 128.105, in terms of making a finding of parental fault, it lists the six different areas and their ORs, right? Abandonment is one, neglect is one, token efforts is one. The district court's order, which is not, it's kind of hard to figure out what he was relying on, but makes the statement in seemingly some type of conclusion, his token efforts support by clear and convincing evidence his abandonment and neglect. It seems like he mishmashed everything together, and those are three very separate and distinct statutorily defined parental fault grounds.
How are we
supposed to figure out whether he actually found abandonment under 102, I believe, or did he just say token effort seems to think it was abandonment? Did he actually
he was
find
very clear
neglect
when he went
under
through the
106,
token.
Or did he just say token effort seemed to support the idea of neglect?
I think they're interrelated in this situation because it is a little bit of an extraordinary case. It's not your typical termination fact pattern when you found an underlying divorce and an underlying custodial order that then a parent did not comply with. I think abandonment.
How did he not comply with the custodial order? Because the custodial order was mom gets to decide what visitation is.
And he was supposed to file a motion if he disagreed with his level of contact. And if he felt, it specifically said by Judge Harder, if you disagree and you feel that you've complied with everything Dr. Collins has asked you to do, please motion the court.
So that's because he didn't motion the court, his parental rights were terminated?
Essentially because he showed no effort to correct his parental fault. He had said over and over again, I fixed everything. He said over and over again, I'm better now. But he would not provide any proof that he had complied with any of Dr. Collins. And the important thing to understand,
that's
too.
That's inaccurate. There were two doctors who testified, right?
No.
Who?
No, there was no one that testified at the termination.
Two doctors who provided reports.
Correct.
Two doctors who provided reports. One who said they did an evaluation and they found no mental health concerns. And the other doctor who saw this gentleman many times over the course of 2 years and documented his progress. So I'm really not sure how you can say that he didn't do anything.
That was a social worker. That was not a doctor. And Dr. Collins was clear that his level of treatment needed to be a master's or doctoral level. He met with a clinician, a social worker.
A licensed clinical social worker is a master's level mental health professional.
There was a report, a competing report that was submitted and not actually entered into evidence in the divorce. And that is the report from appellant's provider who met with him, I believe, one time on one occasion for a period of hours, as opposed to Dr. Collins, who met with multiple individuals, mom and dad repeatedly, reviewed the notes that Justice is referencing from the clinician, the social worker, and found some errors within the treatment records.
Three years ago, right? Correct.
In January of 2021. Correct. And it's important to understand that dad stipulated to those recommendations. He agreed to abide by those recommendations in March of 2021. There was a stipulation on record, which was presented at trial. Dad agreed to abide by these. That's not in controversy. He agreed to abide by these until time of trial. And the trial didn't happen because dad didn't prosecute his own case. He wouldn't follow the rules of civil procedure and submit his evidence and submit his pretrial and submit his financial disclosure form. And that's why there's a defaulted decree.
So he loses his kids because of his inability to navigate the legal system?
He loses them because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. If he wants to prove that he's a better person, show that evidence. It wasn't possible for him to take Dr. Collins' report and give it to any of these clinicians because I was the only person in possession of that record. The court had it and I had it. He didn't have a copy of it.
You're not helping yourself, okay? I'll ask the marshals to excuse you if you can't conduct yourself in court in a proper way. Understood, sir?
That record was only in my possession, and I wouldn't have released it without a court order saying, give it to this clinician, give it to this provider so that they can review it and accommodate that treatment plan as outlined by Dr. Collins. He never requested that I do that. He never requested that the court do it. So it was impossible for these people to have reviewed that and accommodated and put his treatment plan into effect post that report. It's just impossible.
Let me go back to one of the points I was trying to make about the three separate parental fault grounds. In Chapman, we said neglect cannot be established when a child is left by a parent in an environment where the child is known to be receiving proper care. It seems here that the children were doing well and thriving and very much receiving proper care with mom and grandparents in the home they were living at. Yet there seems to be, by the judge, a reliance on the idea of neglect as one of the parental fault grounds. The failure to provide towards that shelter, food, adequate care is a monetary issue. Maybe you're not paying child support if it had been ordered. But how is neglect an appropriate parental fault ground under these circumstances?
Because it wasn't just the money and it wasn't just not sending birthday cards and not sending Christmas presents. It was a complete lack of involvement in their lives, as I indicated earlier.
Not the definition of neglect, and it's not what we said in Chapman. Keep Chapman in mind and tell me how neglect applies here.
I don't think we need neglect in this scenario. As the statute says, we need one area of parental fault. We only need one area of parental fault, and best interest factors favor the termination.
I agree with that. Okay, so moving on then to abandonment, where there has to be some indication from the parent that they have entered on a course of no longer having involvement with their children, as opposed to just not doing it the way we would like them to do it, or not consistently going back to court to change things. So how does abandonment apply here?
If you look at the emails that Justice referenced, they're sporadic over 4 years. There's one in 2019, there's a couple in 2021, a couple in 2022. There's not a consistent record of, please let me see my children, please let me see my children, here's evidence I'm better. He just says that he's better and refuses to show any proof of that and refuses to go to court ever. He never filed a motion.
Counsel, and I would just note for the record here that there seems to be some responses from, and I don't know if that was you or Maurice, it was, okay. Which basically said, stop asking to see the kids. Stop berating my client and asking us to see the kids. Do what you're supposed to do per Dr. Collins's report. And then we'll go from there. But you clearly made a request that he stop asking to see the kids.
I did prefer he communicate with myself. There was TPOs in place in the initial proceedings. There was a lot of violence. She had to use a safety plan and homeless shelter to get out of the marriage. So I did prefer he communicate with me. And the intent was, please stop harassing my client. Speak to me about the legal aspect of this case. Talk to her about the kids. Talk to me about the legal aspect of this case. And again, every time we communicated, myself or my client, please show us proof that you've done what you were supposed to do. I'm not trying to keep them from you. I talk about you. I have pictures. I reference you. Please do what you're supposed to do to see these children. Because if you look at the record, which was entered, the Blue Butterfly House, the Zoom, trying to use her parents, she did everything she could, mom did, to make dad have safe, appropriate contact with the children. And what did he do? He broke the rules. He refused to pay. He tried to use the communications to attack mom, berate mom, instead of focusing on his children. He wasn't interested in these children. He was interested in maintaining a relationship with mom, which he said over and over again in these pleadings. The abandonment is that he simply did not do anything to show this court or the district court that he cared about these children and his parental rights. He could have motioned the court once, and that would have been evidence. And that's what the district court said. You have not filed a motion ever. Say, I've done what I'm supposed to do. Mom is preventing me from seeing these children. Here's my proof that I've done what I'm supposed to do. Please let me see them. Never once. That's less than token efforts, the court said, and I agree with him. And in that vein, he did not follow a clear path to reunification with his children, which is part and parcel to any custody case, as Justice Lee pointed out. That is very common. We do not, in custody 128 cases or 425, say, we're not going to give you any path to reunification with your children. That's not something we do. We outline exactly what we're supposed to do, and he stipulated to these recommendations. He entered an order with benefit of counsel saying, I will follow these recommendations until time of trial. I'm giving mom physical and sole custody of these children. He gave that up. Well, at the time of termination, there was nothing to terminate. He had no relationship with these children, period. By his choice, by refusing to abide by the recommendations he adopted, and then the court adopted, he refused to show his parental interest in these children. Token efforts is absolutely proven by substantial evidence at the time of trial, and that's all what we need. A parent needs parental fault and best interest. It was not in the best interest of these children. That's not even something that the appellant is really belaboring, because it's proven by substantial evidence clearly. But they were with Marie. They had soccer and good school grades, and they had all kinds of thriving evidence was shown at trial, and also harm when they did have hesitations with dad. They would act up behaviorally, bedwetting, nightmares, acting up in school. The oldest boy, who has the only recollection of dad, would hit other children. Marie testified to all this, that when she had to put them on Zoom, when she had to put them in contact with dad, that is how he would behave before and afterwards. There was evidence that they had a good life post-dad, and that he just chose not to participate in it. And no one stood in his way. No one prevented him from, in fact, there's communications with Dr. Cullen from about 3 or 4 months before the petition was filed, where we asked her, this is what he's showing us, is this enough? And she's giving us a rubric. She's saying, I need a court order to evaluate the evidence, but here's a rubric. And dad didn't take that rubric to his providers and have them fill it out and show it to myself or to mom. He just did nothing. This was months before we filed the petition. At some point, mom needs to be able to move on with her life and provide for these children as she has since 2019, and make sure that they're safe and secure, and that stepdad can perhaps adopt them once this proceeding is over with. That is something that's part and parcel in any termination case. The only unusual aspect of this case, which I believe is a red herring, is that there was a custodial order. But again, it's like the LCN case, where there was a custodial order saying, you cannot see your children until XYZ, and dad just refused. He refused to comply with that order. And the court found in that case that that's abandonment, that refusal to comply with that order is abandonment. It's an evidence of an evinced desire not to reunify with your children. Normally, we see parents do whatever they have to do, jump through any hoop, you know, a substance abuse disorder, different mental health problems. They go and they provide for them. They provide proof that they have addressed it, and they get reunified with their children. Dad just refused here, and that's why the termination was appropriate.
Thank you.
First of all, there was no evidence of a stepdad even mentioned in a pretrial memo by the respondent or testified to at trial. So that's new information that should not be presented today. Additionally, the respondent says that the divorce information should not be construed, should not be looked at. But the respondent spent 6 pages in her answering brief talking about everything that took place in the divorce proceeding, 6 whole pages, and then continued to reference all of those actions throughout her brief. My client overcame any presumption that he only exercised token efforts to communicate and care for his children. Even if the respondent is right, he only made token efforts, he overcame the presumption by getting another mental health evaluation, by engaging in therapy for 2 years, by completing therapy, by requesting visitation 30 days before a petition was filed. And the decree of divorce doesn't say he just has to file a motion in order to get visits. It says that he first must reach out to the respondent's counsel to see if they can stipulate. So he didn't just have to rush to court. He did the right thing by contacting the respondent's counsel. And I really think it's important for me to highlight the email that he sent to Respondent's counsel on March 14th of 2022. Marilyn, here are the reports for your review. My understanding is that you said you were open to settling if I could show that I had met the recommendations set forth by Dr. Collins. So he sent Marilyn Kasten those reports in March of 2022. The letter from therapist Ryan and the evaluation showing that he did not have any mental health psychosis. And still, he was not allowed to visit his children. He thought that those documents demonstrated that he complied with the custody evaluation. Once again, if the plan was so clear, how come respondent couldn't look at the documentation and say he's met it, let him have visits? Sunshine Collins couldn't even look at it and say he met it, let him have visitation. And respondent said that his therapist and the psychologist did not review the custody evaluation. That is patently incorrect. Eric Smith specifically said in his evaluation that he reviewed Sunshine Collins' recommendation. So let me just tell you what page that's on. It's at record 410. Page 410 of the record, he says, I reviewed the report and objective test results by Dr. Collins. It's right there. More importantly, the therapist that Ryan saw for over 2 years specifically cited information from the custody recommendation in his letter dated February 28, 2022. And that's at the pages of 417 and 418. Mr. Christensen states, he talks about emotional awareness, regulation, and tolerance. He talks about distress tolerance, impulse control, mood regulation, and reducing symptoms associated with PTSD. When you look at the decree of divorce, by the default decree of divorce filed by respondent, it verbatim takes the custody evaluation recommendations and puts it into the decree. And it says from the custody evaluation, distress tolerance, impulse control, mood regulation, cognitive behavior therapy, which is the CBT therapy mentioned by Mr. Christensen. And it also says that he has to reduce symptoms of PTSD. So I guess what I'm trying to point out is the language from the therapist's letter is the same language from the custody evaluation. So Ryan's therapist knew what the recommendations were and specifically referred to them in his letter. And at trial, when Marilyn asked Ryan, how did his therapist get the recommendations? He said, because you sent me an email of the recommendations and I provided those to my therapist. May I just sum it up by saying, Mr. Stokey's parental rights were terminated as punishment, not to protect the welfare of the children in contravention of Nevada law.
Thank you both. I understand very well. These are complicated emotional cases, and I appreciate your passion on behalf of both your clients, the briefing and the arguments in this matter.